Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you very much. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio, everybody. It's a delight to have you with us. You know, we talk to a lot of amazing... Whoops, I made a mistake there. We talk to a lot of amazing people on these broadcasts from all walks of life, people who do all kinds of careers. Sometimes there are careers that you never knew existed, and people are doing things that really are absolutely amazing, and they're fascinating. We're going to be talking to someone like that today. We're going to be talking to a nurse. Now, you all know what a nurse is and what a nurse does. Many of you may be nurses, but I'm really interested to know if you know this category of a nurse. We're going to be talking to a nurse scientist. That's exactly right. Her name is Mary McCarthy. She lives out on the West Coast in Washington, the state of Washington, and it's pretty fascinating. As a scientist, she supports research activities throughout the military hospital where she works. She developed her own research protocols as a staff scientist, and most amazing, she works in the hospital as a civilian as opposed to being on active duty. It's an amazing story. We're going to get all the details from her, and what she, as she puts it, she says she does a broad definition of research, mostly health promotion research, and it involves interacting with research participants who might be hospital workers. They also might be service members of all branches, and involves one-on-one interaction, and there are specimens collected where she would do lab-based analysis on them, and it's also human-based interaction that might be education and teaching study participants. Sounds kind of complicated, but it's certainly a different aspect of the career as a nurse. I didn't know there was such a thing as a nurse scientist. I told that to Mary a moment ago. She said, I'll bet you there are a lot of people who feel the same way. Anyway, it's a delight to bring her on all the way from the state of Washington. We're, of course, on the East Coast. She's on the West Coast. Mary, good morning. It's nice to have you with us. How are you today?
Hi, Doug. I'm just fine today. Thank you for having me.
Listen, it is our pleasure to have you. We're going to learn from you, which is what, you know, we learn from all kinds of people that we talk to. That's what makes these broadcasts so absolutely amazing to do. So let's go back and tell me a little bit about your career, how it began. Obviously, I assume you started as a regular nurse and a regular RN in the beginning. Is that right? Tell me.
Yes. Yes, I did. I started my nursing career on active duty. I went to a four-year nursing program, and I received an ROTC scholarship there. And so I entered the military, the Army. They had an Army Nurse Corps, of course. I wanted to be part of that. And so I sort of thought I was going to begin my career in the military and then leave and, you know, maybe go back towards home or something like that. But after that first 4 years, I was hooked. I stayed in the military for another 13 years, and I had all kinds of nursing experiences, and I loved each and every one of them. I worked in the emergency department. I worked in the ICU. I worked on a medical surgical floor. They provided many opportunities to help you figure out what your niche would be for nursing.
So you, and I know you got quite an amazing education. You obtained that, most of it, I gather, at the School of Nursing at the University of Washington in Seattle.
Yes.
And you have a master's degree in psychological nursing and a PhD in nursing science. So you've got quite an education. And you did all that while you were in the Army. Is that right?
I did the master's degree, and just a correction, it wasn't psychological, it was physiological nursing.
You're right.
So a little bit more, yeah, science of a different type. But the military is a fantastic place to advance your education. You know, they're still sending nurses every year to school for getting their master's, their and PhD. Now, I had left the military at the time when I decided I wanted the PhD, and I still had colleagues at the University of Washington who reached out to me and said, come back. We want you back. We have a great program in biobehavioral nursing, which was exactly what I was studying, you know, human beings and their behaviors and the scientific sort of underpinnings of that behavior. So it was a perfect fit. So I went 4 years to the University of Washington while I was working. People are able to get their doctorate while they're working, and I graduated in 2006, and I have been a doctorally prepared nurse or nurse scientist at my hospital, which is Madigan Army Medical Center in Tacoma, Washington, ever since.
Well, that sounds absolutely amazing. I think it's remarkable you could do that while you were on duty in the military, and I think it's a great credit to you that you went through the process and did this. So explain to me a little bit about what a nurse scientist is. You don't have a degree as a scientist, but your degree really equates to that. Is that right? It's the same thing.
Yes. So what the difference is that oftentimes when nurses will go to get their terminal degree, which is the PhD, or a doctorate of nursing practice, mm-hmm. they have their kind of career planned so that either they want to stay in the clinical realm and be mentoring, you know, other nurses in the clinical setting, seeing patients and all of that, or you decide you want to do research, which might involve laboratory techniques, or it may not. It may just involve, like we were talking about, interactions with other humans, which in this case was most often our service members for me. And you have different tracks in your program where you learn the methods to accomplish the type of research you want to do. And the other track that some people consider is just going into academia, where they might want to be faculty at a university. And oftentimes that does require a doctorate degree. So that would be their track, and the courses they take would prepare them better for that. I was taking courses that prepare me to design research that would, you know, involve all of these kind of behaviors and different areas of the lifestyle that I want to look at for service members. And that was mostly their health promotion, which involves diet and physical activity and sleep and mental health as well.
So I gather that nutrition is a very important something that you deal with, correct?
Yes, that's been, when I said you kind of want to find that niche, well, that was the niche I was going for. And I find that foundational when trying to understand health or disease. Right, because we know that about 80% of chronic disease in this country and that leads to premature death could be prevented by being physically active, adhering to a healthful dietary pattern, and not smoking. So it's so foundational to everything that gave me a lot of variety and options for how I would approach nutrition from a research standpoint.
That's pretty amazing. You know, it's interesting. You just mentioned not smoking. Smoking really, I've heard a lot about this, like from doctors that I've been talking to and hearing from, really can be extremely harmful to the body in many, many ways. And it affects you a lot of ways people have no idea about. Isn't that right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's something we have control over. And, you know, we can control a part of our destiny. We can control how we age. You know, we're all going to live longer, I think. We have ways to prolong life through whether it's medicines or treatments and our own, like, self-care, our own behaviors can help us take charge of how we're going to age. We want to age gracefully. We want to age with health and quality of life. And that's something we could own.
That is so true, because if you don't have your health, you know, you don't have much of anything. Your health is most important.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about some of this research. One of the things that you have done research on involves vitamin D3 and vitamin K2 nutrition. I'm not even familiar with vitamin K2, but explain a little bit about what kind of research you do involving those vitamins, okay?
Okay. Well, the vitamin D3 interest, of course, you could even just say vitamin D, right? We get vitamin D from D2, which is a more of a plant source, and D3 is the vitamin D that our body makes when we get exposed to the sun. So, you know, actually people are consuming vitamin D, and they're making their own vitamin D. So I say vitamin D3 because in several of my research studies, I was having people, like one in particular, they went into a booth that had UVB light, mm-hmm. and that stimulates the sun, right? And so it would stimulate vitamin D production in the body. And we had some great results from that. We had a higher response to, like, improving their vitamin D levels in their blood when they went in that booth once a week for 7 weeks versus just trying to get the average recommended daily dose of vitamin D, which is 600 international units according to the dietary guidelines.
Let me ask you a question. You can get vitamin D3 pills and take that in a bottle form, can't you?
Yes. So they have made D3 as a supplement, and similar to K2, which I'll mention in a moment. And the D3, you can also get D2 in a pill. So we've done both, and the D3 seems to stay in your blood system a little bit longer. That's all I would say. They're both good. They're both okay. They will both raise your vitamin D levels and give you perhaps relief of symptoms, like if you have some muscle weakness or fatigue, you can get a good response with higher vitamin D levels. And the D3 or D2 will, you know, both that response will be from either of those. So,
and are those pills as good as sitting in front of a sun lamp, as you were talking? By the way, how long do you have to sit in front of that lamp if you do it for 7 days or whatever it's? How long each time? I mean, an hour, is that sufficient, or is it longer than that?
Oh, no, not at all. So just to clarify, I was using a medical device product.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lamp you can buy at the drugstore. Some people do use those. I don't know how long you would sit in front of one of those, but in our booth and our wall-mounted lights, people only required about 6 minutes. So it was very, very brief intervention. People came in, they exposed their torso, you know, in a private area, and they received the UVB exposure on their front side and their back side, and then they didn't come back for 7 to 10 days.
Well, that's fascinating. I gathered from what you're saying that really exposing yourself to the sun is really the best thing you can do. Isn't that right?
You got it. You got it. That's correct. People who want to try to, you know, not have to take supplements, they could make some adjustments in their dietary intake of vitamin D, but also try to get out at the time of day in the part of the country they're in, you know, and get moderate sun exposure. You know, we don't want to overdo that because then you've got other issues to deal with. But usually at the kind of peak of the day where the sun's at the highest point, we can just need 10 or 15 minutes and it will stimulate sufficient production on a regular basis.
So on the other hand, what are the problems from people who don't get enough vitamin D, whether it's from the sun or from pills in a bottle? I mean, what are the indications that you have? What are they?
I've been capturing that for quite a while, and what I'm finding, you know, the population I'm studying of young adults mostly, there are complaints of when they're doing their physical activity or their exercise, if you will, in a gym, their muscles can tire out, right? So you can have some muscle fatigue. You can have some general fatigue. I had people indicate on surveys that when their vitamin D level was low, they didn't think as clearly and they had a little trouble with sleep. But when we supplemented them and we checked 6 months later, they had less issues with their cognition and their sleep and their muscle weakness. And of course, that's young people. We know with older adults, there's still the muscle weakness, but we worry about bone health, of course, vitamin D, calcium, and bone health. We want to keep those bones strong as long as possible because of weakened bones or osteoporosis make us, you know, prone to falling and breaking bones easier. And nobody wants that to deal with when we're trying to live a healthy life and live longer.
No kidding. You know, I also understand that the effects of vitamin D and K2 do have an effect on what you call the gut microbiome. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Yes.
Good for
yes.
Explain
and,
that. What does that mean?
Okay. So first I want to go back. I didn't say one very important thing about vitamin D, and that is it's influence, I'll call it influence because we don't have a lot of direct, you know, causation, if you will, with the immune system, but we know that vitamin D has influence over about 1,000 to 2,000 genes, a lot of those involved in the immune response. And that's why you might have heard a lot more talk of vitamin D during the pandemic because people were trying to figure out, is that something we can use in our toolkit to help us stay healthy? And I did recommend to a lot of people to just get their vitamin D levels to normal. I mean, what happens is people are walking around, they don't realize they could feel better. Their vitamin D level is low, but we don't see a lot of symptoms with it. So people should try to get that blood test done, know what their level is, and be shooting for 30 or higher as that number, 30 nanograms per ml or higher, and they may just feel better. So people can do that for immune health, you know, during all these threats, you know, during viral illness and such, we want to keep ourselves healthy with that simple step. Now, vitamin K2 and D3, we're seeing now that there's some literature saying they also influence the microbial community in our intestine. So that's called the gut microbiome. We have trillions. I know that can sound a little difficult for people to hear, but we have trillions of microbes living in our gut that keep us healthy, and unless there's an imbalance because of low vitamin and nutrient levels, where these microbes have to compete for nutrients, then you know we do pretty well. We're in what we call a homeostasis. Our gut is functioning. It's the disruptions caused by these low nutrient levels that make us have something called gut dysbiosis. That means things are just kind of not working efficiently or smoothly. And so I'm setting out to do a new study that will look to see what the vitamin D and K to, you know, how that is influencing this gut microbiome. Because if it's as simple as having people change their diet to get more of those vitamins or take a multivitamin, take a supplement, think how much easier that is when you're suffering from a lot of GI ailments. And the other thing with the gut microbiome is we're finding out, you know, we have this gut-brain access where it influences our overall sense of well-being. And, of course, when we feel healthier, we're happier. And the gut is linked to all kinds of other conditions, you know, neurological as well as endocrine, our entire body. So
what?
That's going to be work that will take place. Vitamin K2, just to go back to that real quick,
mm-hmm.
People think of vitamin K and it has clotting properties. But vitamin K2 is another form of the vitamin K that gets a little less attention, but it's almost as important as vitamin D in your bone health and your immune health. And so I'm looking at them together because I think they're more powerful together.
Well, this is really all fascinating. I'm prone to ask you, could someone taking a typical vitamin pill a day get enough of the vitamin D3 and K2 from the vitamins that they take, the pills they
take?
There's
a nice combination now. Yes,
yeah.
You can take a D3, K2 combination. My recommendation is that the D3 dose be at least 2,000 international units or higher, not more than five, but about 2,000. And the K2 would be the number 180 micrograms is how they label that. And those are healthy doses. They would keep you at a safe and, proper level for the bodily functions that need those vitamins.
Well, it's amazing what proper vitamins can do for you. I mean, a lot of people might really feel a lot better if they start taking a vitamin pill a day. Didn't think about
it's
that.
True.
Let me ask you something. How do you do this?
I don't want to push them.
I know. I was going to ask you, how do you do this research? You're doing this on patients who come to the hospital. I guess they're mostly in the military. Is that right? They're volunteering your research?
So I want to mention that I'm very fortunate. I get funding. I get federal dollars. And it comes from the Tri-Service Nursing Research Program. Almost throughout my career, they've been extremely supportive and allowed me to have this kind of sequential portfolio of research, and not everybody's that fortunate. I've stayed place in a military hospital for over 20 years. Most of the military nurse scientists, they have to move on, and they may end up somewhere where they don't have the research support. So I've built that, and I have a great team. And what we do is we solicit volunteers from the active duty service members. We don't wait for them to be patients in the hospital. I want to understand how I can empower a young adult to take better care of themselves now so that I don't see them as a patient with a chronic disease in 5 or 10 years. You know, we do have a problem with high blood pressure in our young adults throughout the country, and our military are no exception. They also have some issues with weight. They, you know, things that people wouldn't necessarily think is happening in a military population. They get a lot of activity, but they also eat on the run a lot. You know, they don't sit down and have a leisurely meal during the day. They're very busy, and they might be grabbing something at a fast food restaurant. So we have to worry about their cardiometabolic health. What are they doing to, you know, take care of their heart and prevent heart disease? How many steps and how vigorous are their steps every day? How many hours of sleep are they getting? Most of them, it's under seven, just under seven. You know, it's not not something they couldn't work on and improve. It's hovering at about 6.5 hours for many of them on weekdays. So we're educating them how to do better with that. But you know what? The gut microbiome also is responsive to lack of sleep and physical activity levels and, of course, diet mostly. So we're going to try to pull all of that together in hopes of sharing with them some simple measures that will improve not only gut health, but their, health prevention strategies, disease prevention strategies, rather.
But you're just fascinating with all this information. You have written that the top four chronic diseases that impact the lives of millions of Americans are really all diet related. Is that true?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes. And the a good thing about studying, things that have to do with diet and lifestyle, which are, there's a whole lifestyle medicine approach now where we're trying to help people appreciate that it doesn't take much. The American Heart Association and other, like the CDC, they have simple recommendations for the amount of physical activity and, proper components of our diet. But what I really like about studying this is it doesn't have to be that sophisticated, even though I enjoy that part of it, but it has immediate application. I bring in the service members, I sit them down, and they take a survey about what their usual dietary intake is of about 100 different types of foods, and then it prints out a report, and it says you're doing really well on this, and you're doing quite poorly on this aspect, too much saturated fat, too many calories in general. And then we sit there and we're counseling them right then and there after they take that survey. So there's that immediate sort of engagement. We give them a Fitbit to wear or, an activity tracker of any kind. It's very empowering. People think, okay, I have to take control of this.
Yeah. Mary, let me ask you one other question. What I'm trying to get out is your research, is it useful? Does it spread around the military hospitals? How about that?
Well, I would like to think it does. I don't think it's changing policies at, say, the CDC or NIH level, but we have a community of nurse scientists throughout the services, so Army, Navy, and Air Force. They have nurse scientists at most of their large hospitals. Now, we are few in number, I will say that, but there are nurse scientists that are in my community, and we meet at least once a year, and we share the findings from our research in kind of a, presenting like a conference mode. And people take that information back. They share it wherever, they're participating in committees. We publish. So you may have seen I have some publications that we get the results of our work out there to the audience that it matters to. I also go back to the commanders who've been supporting the research by giving us time with their service members. I go back to them and let them know what we found and maybe how they could use that to build more of a readiness strategy for that unit.
That's great news, Mary. Listen, it's been great talking to you. Our guest has been Mary McCarthy. She is a nurse scientist. What an amazing career you have had as a nurse. I'm sure you didn't think it would be this way when you got in as a nurse to begin with. Anyway, Mary, thank you. I wish we had more time. You can connect with Mary on LinkedIn, Mary McCarthy on LinkedIn. And thank you so much for taking time to fill us in on what you're doing as a nurse scientist.
Thank you, Doug, for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it, and I'm open to anybody reaching out with questions or comments. So thank you.
All right. You are very welcome, Bye-bye. Mary. Lovely having you as our guest. We really appreciate it. Thank you so very, very much. All right.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
That we do. I'm Doug Llewellyn, and we'll be doing that next time, everybody. Till then, take care. Bye-bye.